Adam Cravens, and Jane Ellen watch more movies each month than most people do in a year. Parental guidance suggested reviews new movies in theaters with no spoilers promise. These film nerds know their stuff.
Hello and welcome to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
And because the movie theaters are not open, we are talking about films of note. Game changers.
I like that. I think that's succinct enough.
Yes, and I am truly trying to pull from all different kinds of genres, because we could stay in our safe zone and talk about all of our nerdy little movies.
I mean, I'm going to be perfectly honest. Like, I could still be on Lord of the Rings, and that was a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. This could just be like part six of an ongoing series. Like, anytime I go off into a Star Wars tangent, like, I could just stay on that tangent. Like, I could take that thing like 40 all the way to California.
Mm-hmm.
But you were saying,
yes.
before I go off on that tangent.
So, first of all, this is how smart Adam is. Because if I know this, he knows this. This film came out in 1933. What are we going to talk about?
I feel like it's probably one of the Universal Monster movies. If it's 33, I'm guessing.
1933.
I know it's not Gone with the Wind or Wizard of Oz,
not.
Because they were later that decade.
It is not.
I'm willing
to. Do
you
need another hint?
Am I not? Is it not one of the Universal monster movies? Is it Dracula? Is it
no
Frankenstein?
No.
The Wolf Man?
No. It is King Kong.
Oh well, okay. I would have got there eventually.
It is King Kong, and King Kong. I know when. First of all, I know a lot of people haven't seen it. Adam and I have, because that's
now,
how we roll.
They have seen probably a version.
Yes.
Of
which
it.
We'll get to. But again, I have to remind you, 1927, we have the start of the talkies. 6 years later.
I mean, at this point, you're really not that far removed from like Nickelodeons. If you don't,
uh-huh.
If you don't know what a nickel, like basically you threw a nickel in it. And, like, you got to watch pictures move for, like, I don't know, 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, mm-hmm. We went from that to, like, long-form storytelling. Like, in a matter of, like, Nickelodeons are probably popular, what, like, 1915, 1914, like, earlier parts of that. To now people are sitting down and watching these on an enormous screen and getting to see these fantastic things happen.
Yeah. Now, in King Kong, you saw King Kong battle it out with dinosaurs. So these movies, they've just started to talk. And before then, it's not that some of it wasn't grand on a grand scale, because it was. But you didn't have otherworldly.
I also think it's fair to, like, whenever we say there's dinosaurs, like, fighting, like, giant, like, apes and stuff like that. It's not mundane now, but like I can go to the Sci-Fi Channel and I guarantee it. Like, if there's not a movie on right now that's doing something like that, give it 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, like Jurassic Park doesn't exist. The book like does not exist. Like none of that does. Like you're getting to see people like maybe dance, or like you're still excited about the fact that the person on the screen. Like, mouth is moving and you can hear their words.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like, you don't have Cartoon Network with a show about dinosaurs. Like, none of this is available anywhere. Maybe you have got a comic book that you've wrapped up and stuck in your pocket, or maybe you've read a book
mm-hmm.
about something like the Lost World. Maybe you've read that book. Not the Lost World that Jurassic Park is the sequel to, but the original Lost World that it got its name from. This stuff, you couldn't see it, like, except in your imagination. This film, and I know I keep invoking the name, was essentially its generation's Jurassic Park. Like, the special effects in it, like, just the epic globe-trotting nature of the movie, like, you had never seen anything like that. And it looks quaint now, but I mean, you're also talking about being, what, 90 years removed
mm-hmm.
from the film? So if you will look at it for what it is in the time period that it's released, and the fact that, like, I don't know if they necessarily hold up, but you still have to appreciate that going, all right, 1933, what were we capable of? Like, what? Oh, what was on television? Oh, televisions don't exist at that point. Oh, okay, all right. Well, what was on YouTube? Oh, okay, that doesn't exist either. Like, this was a spectacle beyond compare. And, like, if it tells you anything, like, Peter Jackson was essentially, like, so inspired by that film. When they did give him the opportunity to remake it in, what was it, 04, 05?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he jumped at the chance because it just meant that much to him. And, like, I don't know if you know what that guy's done, but, like,
a few things.
He hasn't exactly not had an impact on cinema either.
Yeah. So, this fascinates me. One of the guys behind the creation of the story of King Kong, he was fascinated with gorillas as a kid. So at some point he has seen gorilla stuff in books because he hasn't seen it on TV.
No.
He hasn't watched National Geographic.
We need to keep reinforcing that. He didn't watch, like, Nat Geo and get fascinated by a do documentaries even exist at this point?
He went, when he was older, he went on some sort of a study and hung out with scientists who were studying baboons. And in his mind, he thought, gorillas are really interesting. What if I could make gorillas and Komodo dragons fight? And then he knew a guy who knew a guy, and he writes a script. It's going to be gorillas and Komodo dragons fighting. How can we make this happen? Is how it all started. Because some kid, back before it was even 1900, some kid said, oh, I really like gorillas.
Huh. Well, I mean, as much as you and I will, like, pick on it from time, like, John Carter, the book that's based on of the film that lost Disney a lot of money.
That's how they refer to it.
The book is actually, it's not quite old as dirt, but, like, John Carter, like, is this hugely imaginative, like, story where you are having these fantastic things happen. And I think sometimes people forget that, like, these books and the stuff that input, like, or he'd probably read, like, a science fiction, like, probably not even a comic book. It's probably just a hardback, like, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle wrote this, or, like, maybe he's read some Alexander Dumas, and he's like, I love it when they sword fight, and they just start putting all of these genres that they've read about in books and these fantastic things that literally the only place you could see them was in your head. Or maybe if you were lucky, somebody had done an illustration somewhere, maybe for the cover of your book.
But the
summer blockbuster doesn't exist at this point.
So they realized that Komodo dragons really do exist. And people do know what they look like because photos, books, sketches,
museums, what have you. Yeah.
But, so there's an issue with it looking realistic. However, if you make it dinosaurs, well, I give you a whole lot more leeway because we kind of knew what they looked like in 1933, but no one's really going to be going, I don't believe their arms were that long in that one. And it's just going to look more realistic because you know it's a giant gorilla and a dinosaur.
It's kind of similar to the uncanny valley that you get in, like, Zemeckis. Did a lot of motion capture films in the early aughts. Polar Express, Christmas Carol. I think he produced Mars Needs Moms. And they're so realistic looking, but there's something wrong, especially, like, in the eyes or, like, the way that the characters are moved, that your brain knows that they look real, but they're not doing something that you're used to in... As if, like, when you and I are having a conversation, you know what a human looks like and you know what their eyes look like. None of us have the advantage of having seen a dinosaur. So, like, nobody's going to show up and just be like, I mean, like you said, well, actually, dinosaur throats, they look like this. And whenever they bite, they do this motion and
that looks
that motion.
So fake.
That is not. Why did you not just have it come into the studio and record it for posterity?
So, again, keep in mind the time. This is before the stock, no, this is right after the stock market fell. That was 29, correct? Yes. Stock market fell in 29, so it's not completely all fixed up. And yet, King Kong, the 1933 King Kong, the budget was around, let me be precise here. The budget was $672,000 in what was most likely 1931 and 1932, that came out in 33. More than half $1 million at that point in time is an obscene amount of money.
Now, let's be fair. Half $1 million today. Like, if you were to hand me $500,000 in the year 2020, you have changed my life.
Yes, okay. I wouldn't say it was an obscene amount of money.
No, that's obscene, Jane. That I'm just telling, like, but to go back to, in time to 1933,
mm-hmm.
holy, like, that's an astronomical sum.
That's a Daddy Warbucks rolling on a bed of money.
Holy cow,
money.
Like, you're set for life, and so are your kids, and so are their kids.
Uh-huh. And this film made $5.3 million in 1933. Again, you've got to see where it is in history to realize how this film changed everything.
I mean, like, as much love as you and I give, you know, Star Wars and Jaws and or Raiders of the Lost Ark, and just being like, they showed how you did. Like, this is real before anything. Like, really, even like the concept of a feature film with, I don't know if realistic is the word. I mean, you've had films that have done fantastic things or tried to do them, but like, it still looked like a bunch of idiots standing around mm-hmm. in, you know, cardboard costumes, like shooting fake lasers at each other. King Kong was just this revolutionary, groundbreaking way, and you didn't necessarily know how they did it. Like, either you, I mean, maybe you had your guesses, but like, it wasn't just like somebody dressed up in a suit. It was moving, and you didn't necessarily understand how all these special effects were being achieved. Like, in addition to having an engrossing story, which at the end of the day is what you have mm-hmm. to have to make something like this work. But you combine that with like state-of-the-art special effects. Like, that's how you get a Jurassic Park. That's how you get like an Avatar. That's mm-hmm. how you get that movie that just takes the collective consciousness and puts every eye on it.
Now, at this point, you don't have to have seen the 1933 film to realize that at some point, King Kong will climb the Empire State Building and have an issue with those pesky airplanes.
There's a good chance if you have ever seen anything that parodies pop culture in any way, like, I guarantee you The Simpsons in their 700 episodes at this point have probably parodied that. I'm going to go say probably at least 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
It is such an iconic moment in cinema history. Like you said, even if you have not seen the film, you have seen that image depicted or probably parodied, or you've seen it like in a, if they're doing a sizzle reel for like mm-hmm. Universal movie or at the Oscars or anything, you have seen that image, even if you don't necessarily know what the entire context of it is.
You're listening to Parental Guidance Suggested, brought to you by Hinson Oakley Family Dentistry. Jane Ellen and Adam Cravens talking about the 1933 King Kong, which changed everything. Now, one of the stars, Robert Armstrong, I think.
That sounds right.
Yeah, Robert Armstrong was a silent movie star and was one of those who actually could speak where people could understand him. So his career continued. And so box office-wise, he was one of the bigger draws because he was a name that the audiences would know. Although today you're like, who? Though you might remember Fay Wray because Fay Wray.
And she has quite the scream.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, this film like hinged on two things, really. You buying whether or not like that monkey was scary or her scream. Like, it's all over that. But like, those two things, if they don't work, this film falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't matter if there's dinosaurs there. It doesn't matter if they're swatting at stuff on the Empire State Building. Those two things are essential to this movie being effective.
And this movie has an extraordinary last line. I know you can probably say the last line of Gone with the Wind. I'm trying to think of how many other movies. Well, Back to the Future, I can say the last line, but...
If they didn't do an effective period at the end of the film, it at least created an ellipsis that drew you in again and again. But yeah, I think the 'twas beauty killed the beast,
right,
like, is so much so that I believe it's also appeared in all of the remakes.
Yes,
if I'm remembering correctly.
It would be wrong if it didn't.
Well, it's so tied in to that. I don't even know exactly. It's not a franchise. Like, what do you, that story or that the iconography? Like, there's a couple of things you can get away with. Like it doesn't have to be black and white. Like, you don't have to use stop motion. But like, there's a couple of elements like in that cake. Mm-hmm. If you take that ingredient out, you're just like, what is this? Tastes terrible. Like, what's, and I think that line is also another part of it. Like you said, like the Fay Wray scream, the ape. You have to have the ape for King Kong. Like, you need to have the damsel in distress. More than likely, if you're not going to use the Empire State Building, you're going to have a large building of some sort that he is going to be fighting. More than likely, some kind of jets or army or like your skeletal structure of that. And it seems like everybody wants to use the bookend at the very end of 'Twas Beauty Killed the Beast.
But you know, it really wasn't. It wasn't beauty that killed the beast. It was the horrible man that took him off of his home island. It was really his fault. And then it was the horrible people with their flashing bulbs. Fire, fire! Oh, it's Frankenstein. But still, same thing. So the beast really never did anything wrong. And it's billed as a horror film. And I've seen it more than once. The only horror to me was what happened to King Kong. I was always sympathetic to King Kong because... he didn't want to go to New York. He didn't want to appear on Broadway. He kind of thought Fay Wray was cool.
Him and Frankenstein's monster really do end up getting a bad... like, yes. As much as they are monster... like, I mean, King Kong, like, you know, he did rip open some, like, dinosaurs, like, mouths.
And, but for good reason.
Right.
Attacking.
I mean, if a crocodile started to bite me, I'm not going to be like, hey, we're out in nature, buddy. Come on, let's all be free. No, like, if I could snap an alligator's neck and it's trying to bite my hand off, I will guarantee you 100% of the time, I will snap the gator's neck. Just straight up. I'm not saying he's wrong there. But I guess the line also loses a lot of its poetry. If you're like... well, twas the airplane shooting bullets at him that killed the beast.
It was, that just always bothered me. And maybe it's because I grew up watching Tarzan movies. My name's Jane. What else am I going to do? Oh, and that's what was on Sundays. You had the Bowery Boys. Oh, yeah, I went there. Abbott and Costello, Tarzan movies. Because that's what I did on Sunday.
Well, Tarzan, another
we'll get
bit of iconography that like has been reinterpreted
very many times. And yet the same thing with Tarzan, that it always bugged me. You know, these great white hunters show up. It's like, people, you're clearly evil. You're messing up everything. Tarzan's getting along with all of the native peoples and the native animals, except for the crocodiles that he appears to have issue with. Always have to fight them or the alligators. I never remember which is which. That's my fault.
I don't either.
A random lion may get knifed, but for the most part, he's chill. It's those hunters that are here. And so then, much like King Kong, you got all that happening. But it is extraordinary, especially what it did.
I have always thought it, like, you get so upset at, like, man. And like, essentially, I'm being upset at, like, men, and I don't know if you know this. I didn't know if I've told you in the 20 years that we've known you. I'm a man. Like, there's so many films.
20 years, it's not quite 30, but it's closer.
I'm putting it out there. But I'm just saying, like, I'm always just like, ooh, we need to get rid of all of them. Ooh, stupid man. Wait. No, not all of them. A lot of them. Some of them. The bad ones, at the very least.
I mean, honestly, King Kong is the kind of thing where if you were that kind of college student... and you had to write a thesis about man versus nature and man versus man, all that stuff, you could totally do it with the King Kong story.
And I mean, like I said, it's one of those twice told tales. I mean, like we said, Frankenstein is essentially the same. Like,
Beauty and the Beast.
You have all of these elements. It's just this one happened to, you know, have a giant monkey swatting at airplanes on the Empire State Building.
You know, if it's a monkey, don't they actually have tails at them? It should be a gorilla.
I mean, if they sure, why not?
Now, there have been many, many, many remakes. My favorite, not so much a remake, but it is adjacent to, would be the most recent Skull Island. Maybe because Tom Hiddleston's in it. I mean, the only sin about that movie is he never took off his shirt. It was hot.
That's we saw very different movies then.
We have
different complaints about these films.
My daughters have the same complaint.
Now, I do think it's funny that they just chose to populate that with a bunch of Marvel stars. Like,
yes.
They were just like, hey, what are you up to? We're going to bring you there. Hey, Nick Fury, what are you doing? Captain Marvel, Loki. Yeah, come on over here for just 1 minute. Just 1 minute. Yeah, we need to get a little bit of that sweet Marvel juice right off you.
And
here, let's ring it out. There we are.
I do like the way the minds went because in after King Kong came out, the next film was this then the first? I wouldn't say it's the first franchise because wouldn't Chaplin be his own franchise, I guess? I'd have to think that out. Anyway, but right after King Kong, they made Skull Island because, well, there's one. Well, how did there get to be one? There has to be a place where there are more of them.
I would actually have to sit down and look about the sequelizing it, but like this is like a prime example of the way to do it, and it just kind of, it extrapolates its own story. Like if there is a place with giant apes and dinosaurs, what the heck else is on that? Like it's perfect. For it to take this, like, literally, what, is it a spider?
Oh, whoa.
Sure, why
whoa.
Not?
Whoa. There is a 1933 movie called Little Kong, a 1986 movie called Lady Kong.
I believe there's a Son of Kong
there's
somewhere in
there. There's a 1986 Baby Kong. What?
There's King Kong, and again, they're not quite as tightly held together as, say, the Marvel Universe films are. I would say oftentimes they contradict themselves. I stayed up many a night in elementary watching these at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was that kid that was constantly trying to put things together. Like, well before shared universes ever existed, I was just like, huh. What about what happened right there? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
You're right. The first sequel after the 1933 King Kong was Son of Kong that featured Little Kong. All right. And then you have King Kong versus Godzilla in the 60s and Kong Escapes. Where did I read Skull Island? Anyway, I'm also reading that 2020 was supposed to be the 2014 Godzilla
versus
King Kong.
Now, that film has also already happened, albeit in a very drastically reduced budgetary way.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen King Kong versus Godzilla. There, at one point, I believe lightning strikes Godzilla, it strikes King Kong and it gives him lightning powers.
So he turned into Thor?
There's not a lot about the movie that I would go with saying makes sense.
I see.
A lot of things, it's just, all right, this scene needs to happen. What can
Was
we
this
have?
The thing with 11 in it?
With what?
You know, what's her face? 11.
No, this was made like I think in the 60s or 70s.
Oh, okay.
No, this is now there is a film that's about to be released that's King Kong versus Godzilla.
All right, so
but
they,
this has
they
nothing
actually
to do
did
with
move
it.
Forward with that. Okay.
Yeah, it's apparently I believe it's in the can.
Oh.
It's just there, or if it's not completely finished, like it's to the point that Universal is about to release it. Now, if this movie does not go, it may shut down their MonsterVerse or.
Mm-hmm.
Their Godzilla-verse or...
I don't know. But, again, to me, King Kong is not a monster. He's just a big ape. Grape ape. He's not the grape ape.
He's not the grape ape. He's not Miguel Gorilla.
No, but he is a large, a husky gorilla, dare I say.
But I'm going to also say that King Kong is a much better name than Husky Gorilla. Now, if you were going to find the store off-brand, like, of King Kong, like, if I'm at a video store and they exist in 1933, I'm just going to be like, oh, well, they're all rented out of King Kong. What about Husky Gorilla? Husky Gorilla sounds good.
Like that.
I mean, it's not quite Oreo, but I mean, it's got the cream filling in it, and it tastes chocolatey-ish. Okay.
So.
Yeah, let's rent Husky Gorilla.
I did not hate the 2005 Peter Jackson version of it. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either. It didn't, like, make my skin crawl, but it was just, there was something missing.
I think the problem that you ran into with that film, like, okay, with Lord of the Rings, like, nobody had really done a film of that nature on that mm-hmm. spectacle of that size, like, in that way before. Like, he didn't just have free reign to do whatever he wanted, but, like, that was his baby. Like, I guarantee you, like, he had, even back into the earlier parts of the 90s when they want him to direct one of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, like, he's talking to everybody about getting to do that movie. Like, he shot that movie in his head mm-hmm. about 14,000 times before he did it. And, like, it wasn't a childhood obsession with his, like, it wasn't gospel to him. They handed over the thing that inspired him to become the filmmaker that goes on to make Lord of the Rings. I guarantee you, he was so scared of doing anything outside. Like, it's basically like someone coming up to, like, a religious person just being like, hey, can you rewrite this portion of the Bible? And them just being like, well, no.
We want your spin.
Yeah. This Jesus guy, what would you do? Like, I will guarantee you, like, the way he respects that film, and even in a lot of the special features, he talks about how much respect he mm-hmm. has for that film. It was probably just likened to him. They're just like, all right, yeah, this thing that you love from your childhood, we want you to do it, but do this spin on it. Like, he probably could not wrap his head around, because he sets it in virtually the same period. Mm-hmm. Like, I guarantee you, if any of those actors were still alive, he would have cast all of them. Like, he didn't want to make a remake of that movie. He literally probably wanted to do just the shot for shot. Mm-hmm. Like, because he loves that film, and I guarantee you, he knows every line of it. He knows every scene. Like, he doesn't even have to watch it to play it in his head. And whenever they handed the keys to the car, he's just like, I can't do anything beyond this because I love this so much. Whereas then you get to Nicholas Meyer on Star Trek II: Wrath of Khan. Nick Meyer, like, enjoyed Horatio Hornblower. But, like, he wasn't, like, bathed in Star Trek. Like, it wasn't religion to him. Like, he just wanted to tell a good story. He didn't care if he went outside this realm. Like, what, we're going to kill Spock? Yeah, sure. That's a good dramatic beat. He understood good storytelling, and he recognized how you could get a good story out of that. But he was not beholden to make sure that, like, he pleased everyone. He just wanted to tell a good story. And I think Peter Jackson probably just was so afraid to do anything outside of that, that it really prevented him from being the reasonably gifted filmmaker that he has mm-hmm. shown himself to be.
So this is what both Adam and I beg you to do. If you have not seen the 1933 version of King Kong, watch it. And watch it knowing and realizing what it was at that time. Because if you watch it with and compare it to movies of today, you're going to go, this is garbage.
What?
This is stupid.
Okay, keep in mind, this thing predates World War II. Like, World War II has not happened yet. Like, mm-hmm. go ahead and look at anything else that was done in 1933. It's not on this level. It is not on this scale. And, like, it's just that there was nothing like this. If you need a point of reference for something like that, like I said, just Google boring crap and it will say all of 1933.
There's quite possibly people who fought in the Civil War who were at the theater to see King Kong.
You could hypothetically have that. Like, people,
yeah.
not people that heard about the Civil War, not people that reenact the Civil War, people that were in the Civil War, could hypothetically be in there and just being like, well, I remember back in my day, you had to stand still for 20 minutes to get one picture, and these move.
Exactly. So if you choose to watch this with your family, you need to prepare them, give them a little backstory, where this happens in time and where this happens in the line of monster movies and so on and so forth. Because you really need to see what it has done, because if you enjoy any monster movie, or I'll even say any adventure movie, you have this is one reason why those movies exist today. Because when you spend more than $500,000 right after the Great Depression, and you make you better
have a good reason.
You make millions
to do that.
And millions and millions, you better believe someone's going, oh, we got something here.
Now, but I also need you to keep in mind that the follow-ups to King Kong are of varying degree. Think of them much in the same way that you think of the Jaws sequels. Like,
yes.
Occasionally, you've got a Jaws 2 in, like, Peter Jackson's King Kong. It's reasonable. Mm-hmm. Like, it's entertaining. Like, it's not an insult to the original, but it's not as good as the original. Then you have, the 76 King Kong?
Yeah, that just...
I believe Jeff Bridges is in it, which is already a good thing. But like it, I'm just like that. Charles Grodin, I want to say is in there. She does some good screams.
Yeah. Anyway.
But that's large, and I think it's about oil. Like I said, if you need to go down that deep dive, like there's 90 years worth of films that are going to continue to explore King Kong, but not all of them are on the same level as the 1933 original. Go ahead and deep dive into them like I did when I was a kid, and some of them I liked, some of them I stopped watching before they were over. I've enjoyed the more recent, like, delving into the Monsterverse, or whatever we're calling wherever Godzilla and King Kong exist now. Those are fun. But if you're going to start somewhere, there is no better place than to start with the 1933 original that really started all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really need to see it. Truly see it and appreciate it for what it is. And in essence, it is a good story, even though nothing is Kong's fault. I mean, seriously.
No, they came into his home. Like, okay, think about this. It's 3:00 in the morning. You are in your boxer shorts and your house coat. You're eating some, like, Captain Crunch. People barge into your house, pull you out of it, put you on a stage, and say, dance. How upset are you at all of this?
Mildly, at least.
They will not, and you're just like, I want to go, I've got it. The bowl of Captain Crunch is obviously soggy at this point. I'm very upset about that. I was trying to finish, I was binging something on Hulu. And I'm sure we didn't pause it when y'all jerked me out of my house. Listen, if you don't, I'm going to get upset. These restraints that you've got, I don't know if you know this, I have superhuman strength.
Yeah.
I don't want to kill, but I will.
And there you have it. So the 1933 King Kong is a movie of note. Thank you so much for listening to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Craven.
You've been listening to Parental Guidance Suggested. Download your favorites and keep up with new episodes in the Hints and Oakley Podcast Center.